Welcome to On DoD on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Now your host, Jared Serbu.
Thanks for listening to On DoD on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. I'm Jared Serbu. Thanks for joining us this week. On this edition of the show, more coverage of the topic that's still at the forefront of most Pentagon watchers' minds, the short-term struggles in the DoD budget, specifically sequestration and the prospect of a full-year continuing resolution. Pentagon leaders have repeatedly warned Congress that those two factors coming together would be disastrous. Last month, the Joint Chiefs told lawmakers that the result would be a military that's unable to respond to crises around the world as soon as the end of the fiscal year, September 30th. Today, we have two guests to talk about it from Capitol Hill, one Republican, one Democrat. They both represent districts with high concentrations of defense civilian employees, almost all of whom would be furloughed under sequestration. Later in the hour, Congressman Jim Moran, a Democrat who represents the D.C. suburbs in Northern Virginia. First up, though, Republican Rob Whitman, who serves as the chairman of the House Armed Services Readiness Subcommittee. His district is also in Virginia, along the Chesapeake Bay. It includes the Quantico Marine Corps Base, Fort A.P. Hill, and several other military installations. Just a programming note, we recorded our discussion prior to President Obama's address calling for a short-term cancellation of sequestration, which is why that speech is not referenced in our interview. Let's start with readiness, since it's a topic we've heard a lot about from the Pentagon's leadership over the past couple days, and you all obviously have a leadership role there, too. The message has been that we're looking at a hollow force that can't respond to crises by the end of this fiscal year if we get both a full-year CR and sequestration. Do you sense any element of, you know, crying wolf there, or does that seem to you like a credible assessment?
I think that's a credible assessment, and what we have looked at on HASC, and specifically what I am looking at as chairman of the Readiness Subcommittee, we do see that there will be a lack of capability and capacity in our force that cuts right to our ability to respond. So it will directly affect readiness, whether it's at the training level, whether it's at the equipping level, whether it's at the end strength level. At all of those different levels, I see our military being affected, and that's across all branches.
Let's talk about your district. A number of military bases, obviously, a number of federal employees, both in and out of uniform. What are you hearing from your constituents about this at the moment?
Well, many folks in the 1st Congressional District in Virginia are understandably very upset with the inability of Congress to address this issue about averting sequestration. I've heard from folks and what it will mean for them, and not just them individually, and not just them as Virginians or how it affects the state of Virginia, but how it affects the nation overall, how it affects our ability to defend ourselves, and how it will hollow out our military. And, you know, our federal employees do an extraordinary job under very trying conditions. And my concern is that we need to keep in mind the great job that they do in conjunction with those men and women in uniform to keep our nation safe. We cannot forget that. That civilian workforce there is absolutely critical. And I've heard from many people back in the district that are concerned about the impact not only that it'll have on them personally, but they really look at things in a more general context and say, listen, Rob, this is really going to affect our nation's ability to defend itself. So, you know, they're very thoughtful, very patriotic about what the effect of this is going to be, and have been very, very vocal and understandably very upset about what the impact of sequestration will be on the nation.
And, you know, we keep using the phrase, if sequestration happens, and maybe we should stop doing that, because in several ways it kind of already has. You know, hiring freezes, layoffs of temporary employees, the Navy and the Air Force are going to be canceling some major maintenance projects in the next several days if they haven't already. I mean, what are you hearing from your district about some of the biggest impacts that either have already happened or just around the corner?
Well, we're hearing a lot of different elements about, canceling ship availabilities, maintenance on critical systems within our military, cutting temporary workers, you know, civilian hiring freeze. All of these different things have a tremendous impact on the ability of our service branches to do their job and to have the capability to respond around the world. So there are many elements there that we hear from, both from people in uniform and the civilian workforce, about the impacts of this. And all of these cut right to the heart of this nation's ability to provide a national defense on a worldwide scale, which is what we absolutely have to do. If sequestration were to happen, and you're right, there are elements of this that are already in place that will take, I think, a significant amount of time to reverse, even if sequestration does not happen. So those are the impacts that we need to be talking about, in addition to what will happen in the future. And, you know, all these new starts are going to be deferred. So whether it's the construction of aircraft carriers, aircraft procurements, research and development, all those things are put on hold as this sequestration is put into place or the continuing resolution expires. So the impacts are significant. And I think as ordinary citizens learn about that, those that are outside the defense industry that want to understand what does this mean for our nation, when they look at what this will do to our nation's military, and we can't forget the men and women that serve. You know, we owe it to them to make sure that they are properly equipped, that they have what they need to be successful. I don't ever, ever want our men and women in uniform to go into a fair fight. I want to make sure they go into places where we ask them to go to defend this nation with overwhelming superiority so they can fight to victory and come home safe.
So realistically, what's going to happen with sequestration? You know, from the outside looking in, it doesn't feel like anything has changed in terms of bipartisan cooperation since the last emergency was closely averted, you know, a month ago. Whatever optimism there was around this issue seems to be kind of fading. Are there any positive signs on the Hill right now that we're not privy to that give you more optimism right now?
Well, you know, I'm always optimistic. I have to be going into this because I think that the outcome of allowing sequestration to go into place is so objectionable that I just don't see how reasonable people can allow that to happen. Now, there's a lot of back and forth about, well, I think sequestration is going to happen. And I understand why some people say that, because I do believe it's a way to bring to the forefront in people's minds what would happen if it were to be put in place. I've been very vocal with leadership to say under no circumstances should the Congress not act, or should this be allowed to go in place. I think it would be absolutely catastrophic for our military, and that's an assessment that's been put in place by people on both sides of the aisle and in both bodies of Congress, and I think that that is critical for us to get this done. We owe it, as I said, to our nation, to our men and women in uniform, to make sure that we provide for the national defense, and if sequestration were to happen, we would definitely see a hollowing out of our military. So, you know, I do believe at the end of the day that it'll get done. There's a lot of discussion back and forth about what it will mean, but it is critical that we have the discussion so people understand if this were to go into place, what would it mean for our nation? And I do believe that that engages the public, engages the electorate for them to call their members of Congress and say, hey, you all have to get this done. You have to make sure you find areas of agreement to offset these sequestration cuts.
We're talking in this segment with Congressman Rob Whitman, the chairman of the House Armed Services Subcommittee on Readiness. Well, these alarm bells and these warnings have been going off for the last 18 months. And as you say, this was never supposed to happen. It was supposed to force members into a compromise. That clearly has not worked. So at some point, don't you just have to say, okay, this was a failed experiment. You know, let's clear the decks and go back to the drawing board on deficit reduction in a way that doesn't hold a bunch of innocent people hostage?
Well, I would agree. I mean, we've been speaking about this for a long period of time. In fact, we've gone back. Those are members of the Virginia delegation and others, especially those on the House Armed Services Committee, to go out and have public hearings and talk to people about what the impacts of sequestration will be so that the public understands it. And we have to continue to have that. And you're right. I think that we have to get back to a basic understanding about what this means and then look at how do we manage a budget in ways that don't bring us to the precipice all the time. Why we should be making long-term decisions about how do we create a track for this budget to get to a point of being balanced, to reduce deficits, and to address the debt. And just as Chairman of the Joint Chiefs, Admiral Mullen, said, the greatest threat to our national security is not any of those kinetic threats out there or those strategic threats. It is this deficit in debt. So we ought to take his words to heart and make sure that we manage this budget in a way that gets us on that long-term track of sustainability and especially allows us to properly resource the military in ways that we need to put in place. We've seen in the past when these times of reset haven't happened properly, and that's usually during a post-war period of time when the military doesn't have the necessary resources it needs to kind of reconstitute itself. And we're at one of those critical points right now that I argue if we don't get this right, we can't press the reset button. We don't get to say, oh, sorry, didn't get it right. We can press the reset button and tomorrow everything will be okay. You know, it takes years to recover if we don't make the right decisions and don't make those right decisions now.
As we kind of drift from budget crisis to budget crisis, it seems like A, they always get resolved or delayed at the last minute, sometimes past the last minute, and B, the players who come up with a deal are a handful of people in a room somewhere. You, the rest of the membership, then get told, okay, here's the bargain, vote on it, up or down. I guess my question is it frustrating to be kind of cut out of what should be the regular legislative process and what are really pretty important issues?
Well, it is, and we've argued, and the leadership agrees, that we need to get back to a regular order, and that is bringing bills to the floor, having them go through the committee process so they can be marked up with amendments that comes to the floor, and then allow an open process for amendments there. That's how you end up with the best legislation in the broadest area of agreement. It's very difficult to bring a bill to bear at the last minute for people to understand it and to say, yes, this is the right way forward. What we've seen is that happen, and that be a short-term addressing of these issues. We do need to get back to regular order, get back to adopting appropriations bills as we should. I argue that we wouldn't be in this position if we've adopted the defense appropriations bills both in the House and the Senate. We've done so in the House. We need to make sure that there's a bicameral effort here to make sure that these things happen. It is critical to get us on the path to where we don't get to these last-minute solutions that, as you said, are short-term. Always they're short-term, and they never have the full scope of ideas that come from the membership here and come from across the nation that provide the best solutions to this nation's problems.
So, as we said at the beginning of the interview, you're now the chairman of the Readiness Subcommittee on HASC. Can you give us a preview of what you think your big priorities are going to be in the 113th Congress over the next couple of years, if it's possible to look beyond the short-term crises we have?
Well, there is. And, we're going to begin, obviously, by looking at what is the impact of sequestration going to be on the readiness of our forces. So that's going to be our focus so that we understand what is unfolding before us. And as we go down that road, we're also going to look within each of the service branches about where the needs exist. How do we make sure we're making good long-term decisions, especially in a post Iraq and Afghanistan war scenario? How do we make sure we have the proper force structure, the proper posture going forward, making sure we understand what's happening in all the different theaters, also with things that are going on back home? So we want to make sure that as we go through what I consider a very challenging time as to how we posture the United States to be ready for any sort of threat, we need to make sure we lay out these scenarios, we ask the right questions of leaders within the Pentagon so that they can lay out to us what their plans are and how they address those scenarios in front of them. I think that's one of the most important things that this session will bring before the Subcommittee on Readiness and the full committee. So my obligation is to make sure that we lay out what the decisions are ahead. How do we make sure that our forces are properly structured, both in manpower and in resourcing and in hardware, to make sure we can meet the threats around the world, which obviously are very dynamic and change almost on a daily basis.
The conventional wisdom around town right now seems to be that sequestration or no sequestration, there are going to be some additional cuts to the Pentagon over the next FYDP, over the next 10 years, whatever it is. And one of the concerns that I think the chiefs have expressed repeatedly is that they're not going to be given the resources to sufficiently train and equip the current force, but Congress is also going to prohibit them from getting smaller so that they can, balance, keep the force in balance. A, do you agree with that assessment that DOD's budget is going to go down in some form, and how do you keep that in balance if that's going to be the case?
Well, there have been reductions put in place from 2011, the $489 billion in reductions. So those are going to be put into place. So that's a reality of what the Pentagon is looking at. So, yes, they will be putting in place those reductions. The concern has always been going forward is that if you place on top of that the sequester and the requirements for our military don't change, it really puts our leaders in a very, very difficult predicament because they can't change, as you said, the number of sailors, the number of Marines, the number of airmen out there or number of sailors that are out there, or the amount of hardware that they have or the requirements that they have to meet. So short of that, you put them in a very, very difficult position. I spent this last week visiting with military leaders in the European theater to get their assessment about what they're facing and also those that are working in the African theater. And almost to a person, they said, obviously they're concerned about sequestration, but they're also concerned about the requirements staying the same, just as you said, and not having the necessary resources to meet those requirements. So it puts them in a very, very difficult, if not near impossible, situation. to be able to deal with that. So I know that's weighing heavy on their minds. And one of the things that we need to address, and that is as we look at how do we properly structure our military, it's incumbent upon us to look at the resourcing, the number of dollars we put towards the military, but also, you know, if there are going to be changes, look at the requirements. Are the requirements able to meet the needs going forward? Should the requirements be changed? How do we address all of those particular situations? And those are issues that are first and foremost on our military leaders' minds, too, as they look at a scenario in the future that may contain sequestration or, you know, these continuing resolutions, which are another deep-seated problem for our military leaders to deal with, and that they can't do anything in the long term. Everything is short term. You know, I have to look at funding for the next 3 months or the next 6 months, and you can't start anything new. You almost have to hold money back to make sure you can meet obligations that you've already committed yourself to in the past to make sure that you have money in the future without knowing, you know, what you're going to be authorized through the Appropriations Act to spend.
Republican Congressman Rob Whitman, our first guest on this week's edition of On DOD. We'll continue with more thoughts from the Hill on sequestration after a quick break. Democrat Jim Moran will join us when we come back. You're listening to On DOD on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jared Serbu. Welcome back to On DOD on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jared Serbu. Thanks for joining us. Continuing our discussion with members of Congress on what's next when it comes to the threat and sequestration of DOD's budget. As most of our listeners are well aware by now, the cuts are scheduled to kick in on March 1st, midway through the fiscal year, and cut every program, project, and activity in DOD by 9%. The president spoke earlier this week about the need to cancel sequestration, at least in the short term. We'll hear part of that address later in the show. Our interviews with two members of Congress were recorded prior to that speech. Next up, Congressman Jim Moran, who, like our last guest, represents a district with a high concentration of federal employees. Moran is a Democrat who represents the D.C. suburbs in Northern Virginia and serves on the House Appropriations Committee. What are you hearing from people? What have you been hearing from people specifically with regard to sequestration and other short-term budget issues in DOD, whether that's from civilian employees, the industrial base, you know, take it where you will?
Well, the federal employees across the federal workforce are very much concerned that there's every reason for them to be so. This is not some vague threat. This is serious, and I suspect at this point that every federal employee is going to be adversely affected by this sequester. Whether they get furloughed or not, their colleagues will be. And I think many employees of the civil service are going to actually be furloughed. Some will lose their jobs in the long run.
Yeah, and for those that are, it's an instant 20% pay cut, which is not insignificant.
Well, that's absolutely right. I think a number of federal employees, and I get this by talking with them, they feel, well, that we've gone through this before, and the Congress always restores our pay, so it's nothing to be too worried about. They're wrong. This is something to be worried about. I would be shocked if the Congress did restore their pay, even though I would do so, because they haven't done anything wrong. They've been doing their work, and I don't think they should be furloughed, let alone have their jobs terminated. And I don't want their pay cut. You know, every federal employee has already contributed about $50,000 towards deficit reduction, a total of $103 billion. So I oppose this very strongly, but I'm in the minority.
Well, are you in the camp that sees the prospects of this increasing, this being sequestration? I think the last time I heard you talk about this, you remarked that Republicans and Democrats simply are not talking to each other, at least in the House. Is that still true? Are there any glimmers of hope out there?
There are insufficient glimmers of hope. My expectation is that sequestration will take place as of March 1st, which means that the agencies need to start planning now and taking actions in anticipation of that date. And those actions by themselves will have a deleterious effect, not only on the capability of the workforce, but the morale as well.
Well, folks have been saying for many months, and I don't know if you're among them, that there's no one on Capitol Hill that thinks sequestration should happen. Is that true right now, do you think, among your colleagues, or are there people who are thinking, you know, this is probably no way to run a railroad, but it's better than any deal we're going to get with the other side?
Well, you'd have to be near insane to think that this is a responsible way to go about budget cutting. The sequestration was designed to be so draconian and so irrational that the so-called super committee would not allow it to take place. That the super committee, made up of equal number of Democrats and Republicans, would reach some compromise, which would cut $1 trillion in a rational, even-handed, thoughtful way. I voted against it because I thought that was expecting too much of this particular Congress, and unfortunately I was right. They were not able to reach agreement. The Republicans were insistent that we can't raise revenues. The Democrats were insistent that we can't touch entitlements. And so now what we're going to do is to take all of the cuts against discretionary programs across the board. Goes back to the Graham Redmond Hollings underlying legislation, which says that each program, project, and activity would be cut equally. Well, that's just, as I say, insane. It's abdicating our responsibility. There are places in the federal budget that can, and in fact, some that should be cut, but not across the board. There are a number of agencies, for example, that are personnel intensive. Air traffic controllers, they don't have any big building. They don't have a whole lot of capital equipment. They work at the airports. Are you really going to furlough them for 1 week or 1 day a week or 1 month a year? What are you going to do about federal meat inspectors? What do grocery stores do when they can't get meat that's been inspected? You can't sell it. I could go down a long list of functions that the federal government performs that people take for granted, but those functions also are to be cut by 1/12. And now there was some mitigation of the effect with the January 1st debt deal, which took care of the first 2 months, but so these agencies, it might actually be a 5% cut, but even so, it's going to be done irrationally. You're going to impose that cut on only 7 months remaining of a fiscal year, so the cut will be deeper than it would be if it extended throughout the year. And it's done in a haphazard, cookie-cutter manner that doesn't distinguish between essential programs and those that are less so. So this is the wrong way to run a government. The entire Congress should be embarrassed. But unfortunately, there aren't enough people who are sufficiently embarrassed that they're not going to let this happen.
Well, if we operate under the presumption that at least a majority of your colleagues are not insane, do you see any prospect that the parties at some point just decide to cancel sequestration entirely, recognizing that it's destructive and silly and it hasn't served the purpose it was supposed to? Or does it only get canceled if it gets canceled as part of a broader agreement?
Well, first of all, I didn't call my colleagues insane. I called the process with which we're going to implement sequestration insane.
Sure.
There is a difference. It's an insane approach. It doesn't mean that all of the let alone all of the members are insane.
An important distinction, yes.
You know, we have acted in a sufficiently irresponsible way that you've got this budget cutting approach that doesn't make any rational sense. So I don't think that we're going to be able to avoid the sequestration by simply passing legislation that says we won't let it happen. because the majority in the House of Representatives are pretty well pledged that they're going to substantially reduce the size and scope of the federal government. And this is probably the only means at hand for them to achieve that objective. One of the things that has become obvious is that they don't want to identify any individual program or activity that they would cut, because then the recipients or the administrators or the people who advocate for that activity will rise up and fight it. And so to avoid that kind of political backlash, they're going to cut everything equally. And so it's much more difficult for the advocates of individual programs to fight this. They think that's a success. I think that it's a shameful dereliction of duty.
Talking with Congressman Jim Moran, a Democrat who represents Northern Virginia, the president's call reportedly at this point is going to be for a short-term solution to this, if he can get that through. Is that where we are now for the foreseeable future, you know, governing in 2 or 3 month increments in permanent crisis mode?
Well, I'm afraid so. I actually opposed the deal, the so-called fiscal cliff deal that took place at the beginning of the calendar year. I think it was, that too was irresponsible, because it did not resolve the situation. All it did was kick the can down the road, but it also took off the table the principal leverage that those who want a sustainable, functioning, effective federal government had, which was that if the Congress doesn't act, then the tax rates are going to go back to the levels they were during the Clinton administration. That was substantial leverage. The Republicans, to my mind, were not going to allow that to happen. Well, the White House went ahead and negotiated away that leverage. So the Republican, at least the leadership, but I think the entire Republican Party assumes there will be no new revenue. Without new revenue, it means that about 40% of our budget is going to be deficit financed every year, which gives credence to these people who want to continue to make budget cuts and to use every crisis situation as an opportunity. The reason why the corporate private sector is sitting on about $2.5 trillion of cash is that there is no predictability. They don't know what's going to happen. Many of them now assume that taxes won't be raised in the foreseeable future, but they don't know what programs are going to be cut. And when you look at the nation's growth, economic growth rate for the last quarter, you realize the role that the federal government plays. Had the federal government just stayed steady, not been cutting activities and cutting spending and people, then we actually would have had an increase in GDP, in our economic growth. But the federal government cuts were significant enough that it had actually dragged down the entire economy. They don't seem to recognize the integral role that federal spending does play and always has played in the strength of our economy. And maybe this will teach them that, but it's going to be a hard lesson for the country to go through in order to teach these people that the federal government is a major and positive contributor to the nation's economic vitality.
And finally, Congressman, from your point of view as a member of the Appropriations Committee, if sequestration does happen, as you think it will, could you envision at least some steps to soften the blow after the fact, you know, for example, giving the department transfer authority so they can at least make some choices about where to make the cuts?
Well, I would certainly vote for that in a New York minute, and I'm going to try to have language inserted into the appropriations bills that would give some discretion to the program managers and to the Congress as a whole. particularly in the defense area, you really have to do that. But I think across the board, you need to exercise judgment. It's bad enough to reduce the size of the government by over $1 trillion, but to do so in a haphazard way could not be more irresponsible. So I would hope that we could get language inserted, but I don't know that we're going to be able to, because there's going to be a fight over the whose ox is gored, whose program is cut, whose program is saved. And some of these folks may want to avoid making those tough decisions, would rather across-the-board cuts. I find that unfortunate and irresponsible, but it's also reality.
Democratic Congressman Jim Moran represents Virginia's 8th Congressional District, parts of the D.C. suburbs in Northern Virginia. Earlier in the hour, we heard from Republican Representative Rob Whitman as we talk about the threatened cuts to the DOD budget under sequestration. President Obama also addressed the topic in remarks at the White House earlier this week, calling on Congress to undo the cuts with at least a short-term deal on deficit reduction. We'll hear part of that address when we come back. This is on DOD on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jared Servin. Thanks for listening to Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Welcome back to On DOD. I'm Jared Servu. Continuing this week's look at where we are when it comes to sequestration and its effect in and around DOD. Earlier in the hour, we heard from two congressmen who represent two defense-heavy districts. One optimistic about finding a way around the automatic budget cuts. One decidedly not. We recorded those interviews prior to President Barack Obama's address asking Congress to come up with a short-term deficit reduction deal to at least delay sequestration until a full budget for this year can be worked out. We're going to listen back to those brief remarks from the White House now.
I want to say a few words about the looming deadlines and decisions that we face on our budget and on our deficit. Deep, indiscriminate cuts to things like education and training, energy, and national security will cost us jobs. And it will slow down our recovery. It's not the right thing to do for the economy. It's not the right thing for folks who are out there still looking for work. And the good news is this doesn't have to happen. For all the drama and disagreements that we've had over the past few years, Democrats and Republicans have still been able to come together and cut the deficit by more than $2.5 trillion through a mix of spending cuts and higher rates on taxes for the wealthy. So a balanced approach has achieved more than $2.5 trillion in deficit reduction. That's more than halfway towards the $4 trillion in deficit reduction that economists and elected officials from both parties believe is required to stabilize our debt. So we've made progress. And I still believe that we can finish the job with a balanced mix of spending cuts and more tax reform. I think this balanced mix of spending cuts and tax reform is the best way to finish the job of deficit reduction. Having said that, I know that a full budget may not be finished before March 1st. And unfortunately, that's the date when a series of harmful automatic cuts to job-creating investments in defense spending, also known as the sequester, are scheduled to take effect. So, if Congress can't act immediately on a bigger package, if they can't get a bigger package done by the time the sequester is scheduled to go into effect, then I believe that they should at least pass a smaller package of spending cuts and tax reforms that would delay the economically damaging effects of the sequester for a few more months until Congress finds a way to replace these cuts with a smarter solution. There is no reason that the jobs of thousands of Americans who work in national security or education or clean energy, not to mention the growth of the entire economy, should be put in jeopardy just because folks in Washington couldn't come together to eliminate a few special interest tax loopholes or government programs that we agree need some reform. Congress is already working towards a budget that would permanently replace the sequester. At the very least, we should give them the chance to come up with this budget instead of making indiscriminate cuts now that will cost us jobs and significantly slow down our recovery. So let me just repeat, our economy right now is headed in the right direction. And it will stay that way as long as there aren't any more self-inflicted wounds coming out of Washington. So let's keep on chipping away at this problem together, as Democrats and Republicans, to give our workers and our businesses the support that they need to thrive in the weeks and months ahead.
President Barack Obama speaking from the White House earlier this week, calling for a short-term budget deal that would at least delay the automatic budget cuts to DOD and other agencies under sequestration. Republican leaders reacted immediately to his remarks, saying any deal that involves tax increases is a non-starter. We'll wrap up our hour on sequestration when we come back from one final break with a rather grim outlook about the impact of the cuts from Admiral James Winnefeld, the Vice Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. This is on DOD on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jared Serbin. Welcome back to On DOD on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jared Serbu. Thanks for joining us. One more segment this week on sequestration. The cuts are scheduled to take effect March 1st, unless Congress cancels or delays them. But as we've covered in previous shows, the military's already preparing for those cuts by conserving cash, especially in its operation and maintenance accounts. Last month, the Joint Chiefs of Staff wrote to Congress warning that if sequestration happens at a year when DOD has no approved budget, military forces will be unprepared to respond to emergencies by the end of the current fiscal year. Admiral James Winnefeld, the Vice Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, spoke about that 28-star letter at the FCO West Conference in San Diego last week. We'll close out today's show with a few minutes from that talk.
Under the current budget uncertainty and mechanism for potential cuts, including the fact that the CR is not necessarily balanced properly in terms of its funding bins, we are at serious risk of rapidly sliding into a hollow force. And as a result, you're probably hearing of steps the services are taking and are planning to take in order to account for the fact that the clock is already running this year and that they want to minimize the damage done by all this uncertainty over their future budgets. It's all true. Part of our challenge is that we can't spread readiness cuts like peanut butter. We have to keep units deploying to our current fight in Afghanistan and for certain other missions, such as strategic deterrence, at the very sharpest possible edge of readiness. So that means the rest of our units will be disproportionately affected. But as it stands, Army Brigade combat teams, as one example, are looking to lose at least 30% of their readiness capability this year. And you can't deploy like that. This means that we'll only be able to cover the conflicts that we're in and respond to the highest of the high national security interests. There could be, for the first time in my career, instances where we may be asked to respond to a crisis and we will have to say that we cannot. Now, it may initially seem like we're crying wolf on this because carriers will still deploy here in the near future. We may not see the global impact of this until late this year or early next year because the forces deploying the soonest are already ready. They have been prepared and they can go. But there are many forces that will not be able to start their training now, and therefore they will be sidelined, grounded, tied to the pier, and they will not be able to deploy if we don't have the proper resources to make them ready to go. But we will see the domestic impact here in the very near future. If you have not already, you will soon be hearing about potential cancellation of maintenance availabilities for ships, potentially 30 this year, reductions at aviation depots, layoffs of 46,000 temporary DOD employees, a hiring freeze. You know, we hire about 2,000 people a week in DOD. And we may soon announce furloughs that could affect the vast majority of our 800,000 DOD civilians, among other measures that we will need to take soon if we don't solve this problem. I would point out that the furloughs, which we really do not want to have to do, amount to only 1/9 of solving the problem that we will have if sequestration does not go away. It's a $5 billion fix to a $46 billion problem. So we're working our way through what that other 8/9 is, and we hope to have our answers here in the next few weeks. But I can tell you that if our readiness drops, then we can't be out there in the real world doing the things to protect our national security interests, to keep our nation safe.
Admiral James Winnefeld, the Vice Chairman of the Joint Chiefs, talking about what he sees as some pretty dire circumstances later this year if sequestration occurs and if DOD continues to operate under a continuing resolution for the full year. Earlier in the hour, we talked to two members of Congress about whether sequestration would happen and its potential impacts in their defense-heavy districts, Republican Rob Wittman and Democrat Jim Moran. If you missed those interviews, we'll post them along with the rest of this week's show at federalnewsradio.com. And that's going to do it for this week's edition of On DoD. Very glad you could join us. We'll be back next week. Hope you'll tune in. I'm Jared Serbu. So long.
You've been listening to On DoD with Federal News Radio DoD reporter Jared Serbu. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. On DoD, Wednesday afternoons at 2, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.